I'd like to introduce now, for those of you who don't know her, Christina Davidson. She is an advocate with the Mosaic Advocacy Project, and she does poverty law and immigration law with low-income refugees and immigrants, and she's on the steering committee of PovNet. Mm-hmm. And she's going to talk about appeals.
Well, and actually, as a steering committee member of PovNet, the first thing I'd like to say, and you'll be happy with me, Penny, is that anybody who's not on the PovNet BC benefits list, and at some point I guess we might be changing the name of the list, should really consider getting on that list, because it's been, I think, most helpful for advocates and lawyers to be part of that list. And we get a lot of our, well, we get to pose our questions, and we get a lot of our questions answered on that list. We get good information, timely information, and support from one another. So if you're not on the list, get on the list. Go through Penny. I felt much the same. I actually felt I should have been on that side, but here I am. So what I've done, and actually I have to give my assistant Judith a lot of credit. It's been a long time since I've done a judicial review. It's been many years since I've done a judicial review. So the whole standard of reasonableness was pretty foggy in my head. And Judith, my assistant, did end up working on a paper that talks about the standard of reasonableness, which is the new standard of review that's going to be used at the tribunal level. Now, my photocopier at work hates me with a passion, and I tried to print off 50 of these, but I only managed to pump out 6. So anyone that does want it, well, we have various ways. I mean, you can tell me your name, and I can take a list. We can just simply put it up on the list, which is the easiest thing to do. So another reason to get on the PovNet BC Bens list. But I think it's actually a very good paper, because I don't think there's really an adequate way for me to sit down here and talk to you about the practical workings of how the standard of reasonableness can work for you. It is legalistic, but it is something that I know that everyone can understand, but it's one of those things where you actually kind of need to sit down and mull it over for a bit. So I do encourage you to get your hands on the little paper that we've produced. So having said that, I thought that I actually thought I wouldn't talk very long, because I thought it was mostly going to be questions, but feel free to interrupt me at any time. I thought I would talk about the whole appeal system or structure in terms of good news and bad news, and good or bad news, depending on how you feel about it. So which do you want to hear first, the good news or the bad news? Good news. I'll start with what I think is sort of the good news when it comes to appeals. First of all, let's deal with the reconsideration. Everybody knows that basically the first level of appeal after the original decision still remains to be the reconsideration, right? And the timelines for that appear to be the same as they were before. But unlike in the past, any of us who are familiar with reading reconsideration decisions, they've been rather scant and rather formulaic. I mean, there's been very little information in the decisions themselves, and it looks like, you know, they're just 10,000 monkeys, 10,000 typewriters, and out it comes. Well, the good news is I don't think they can do that anymore. And even when you look at the forms themselves, by the forms I mean the actual decision form for reconsideration, you'll notice that they have to put a far, far a bit more effort into making those decisions. They have to talk about exactly what facts they have relied upon, what facts they have decided upon, what evidence they use to decide those facts, what their legal basis is. So now they're going to have to go to a lot more effort than they did in the past when making those decisions. And that, for us, is good news. So that's one of the pieces. Now, the other, I suppose you could say, a good piece for that is that although we have, for the most part, been able to do this in the past, but I know that some people have had difficulty in getting information from the ministry. Sometimes they've been forced to make access to information requests, and we all know how long those can take. While others of us have just been able to essentially to call up the ministry and ask for the information and get it, and some of us have used consent forms. Well, the difference now is that, by the sounds of it anyway, this is in their policy manual. This isn't actually in the legislation, but in their revised policy manual when dealing with the appeals, it's quite clear that the expectation is that the ministry is to give all information to the appellant or the appellant's advocate without an access to information request, without any of the nonsense that might have taken place in the past. And of course, this is going to be essential. It's going to be essential to get all, it always has been, but even more so now, to make sure that we get all the information that we can possibly get from the ministry on how they made their original decision, and also that we get all the information that we can get from the ministry in terms of the information that they may have submitted after the original decision but before the reconsideration decision. So there's two points at which the ministry might be plugging information into the system, and one is before the original decision and one is after the original decision but before the reconsideration decision is made. Is everybody connected? Okay, good. Okay, so that piece wasn't necessarily good news, but there you go. In terms of good news and the tribunal aspect of things, well, this may go under good or bad news, but as most of you are probably aware, particularly those who have been paying attention to the BC Bends list lately, we do have the option of having an oral hearing at the tribunal level, or written submissions instead of an oral hearing, but written submissions only with consent of the parties. So I suspect that what's going to end up happening is that the ministry is going to want to do most of their submissions in a written form and not have oral hearings. And I suspect that we, on the other hand, are going to be in a position where we want to have oral hearings. And I guess you could say that the good news out of that is that if we want an oral hearing, we're going to get an oral hearing, because written submissions are only by consent. Okay. And one of the other things that is important to know is, just as in the past, it will be district supervisors that will be representing the ministry at these hearings. And I've put that under good news, because of the current climate, I'm not so sure how happy district supervisors are with what's going on. But perhaps more importantly, I don't think that they're going to be getting the benefit of a whole lot of training around this whole new standard of review that's being used at the tribunal level. I mean, by the looks of it, when I look at the draft, the training manual for the actual tribunal members, it's pretty pathetic. And if history repeats itself, the DSs will be lucky if they get a page of this. So they'll be at, obviously, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that they'll be at a significant disadvantage when it comes to arguing these cases, both because of lack of training and also because, of course, the reconsideration decisions are not being made by them at all. So, I mean, they're arguing, as they've already done in the past, they are familiar with doing this, but they're arguing someone else's decision. So, I mean, I'm trying to put a good spin on some of this stuff because everybody's so afraid of the appeal process now, but there really are some potentially good pieces to this.